I feel like I know Connor somewhat decently well.
I think we both just shared how excited we were
with each other. I'm super excited to get the opportunity to play with him. Everyone knows how good of a player he is. You know, I'll do my best to contribute to his success and the team's success however I can.
Now, former Saber Bo Byram. He is in Chicago, and the Blackhawks and he will, I'm sure, hammer out a new extension, because if they don't do that and he happens to walk in a year, then a trade that many people are already dunking on will get dunked on relentlessly more. Good morning, it's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy is on the course, 100 holes of golf. We got the Venmo QR code up on our YouTube stream if you would like to donate. Courage of Carly, and with right now, I think he's probably, we'll check in with him a little bit later. Probably in the, what do you think? He was on the 12th hole at 6:30. What pace? 25th hole?
I bet he's done 10 holes. Yeah.
I bet he's done 10 holes since then. I haven't got any reports of any birdies or anything, though, so not sure how it's going. I am going to be closing Jack Bushman now on the Western Hotline. We're going to talk about this trade more from the Chicago end of things. Jack, I don't know how your offseason's going, but I am going to close out tabs of hockey reference pages of Jason Robertson, Matthew Nyes, and Connor Hellebuck right now. So, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, safe to say those guys are probably out of the Blackhawks' reach at this point with the fourth overall pick no longer in their possession.
Right. They've made their big move. How that trade, it's Byram, and he had a very good season last year for the Sabres. I thought he was their best defenseman in the first round against Boston. How much are you in agreement with, I think, the overall consensus, which is that, man, Chicago paid way too much, versus they're getting a very good player that will go right to the top of their depth chart at that position?
Yeah, I think both statements there's some truth behind them. I do believe, unquestionably, that Kyle Davidson gave up a lot for Bowen Byram, who is also going to have to get paid a lot. And I think the biggest concern from my end was that while Bowen Byram is probably coming off of the best year of his career, averaged over 22 minutes per game last season, and as you referenced, was maybe the Sabres' best defenseman in that first-round series, he's never really been leaned on as a true number one defenseman. He's never had to be that go-to guy, and while he's been seeking that larger role, and that was the reason why he ultimately became available in Buffalo as well, he's just never been in that role yet as a 25-year-old defenseman now, and the Blackhawks are going to ask him to do a lot next season. And, you know, we're going to find out if he's going to be able to handle that type of role and those type of expectations. But they gave up a hefty price to go and acquire him. And then, obviously, because he only has 1 year left on his current deal at $6.25 million, he's probably going to have to get paid like an upper echelon top pairing defenseman. And that extension, based on what we just heard from Byram, it sounds like there's not going to be any issues in working out a deal. He mentioned he wants to be in Chicago. The Blackhawks can give him that larger role that he's been seeking for. It sounds like that's all going to work out. But if that happens before the start of the season, and I'm very interested to see the timeline of how this extension is going to go, it could be happening before he even plays a game for the Blackhawks as that number one defenseman. So I just felt like Kyle Davidson paid a steep price and also at the same time took a gamble by bringing in Bowen Byram. Now, what I will say is Byram does fill a need for the Blackhawks, and he is going to be their best defenseman next year. He's going to help in the puck carrying side of things. They really need his help on the power play. He's got a good shot from the back end. All those things are true. And even with Jordan Greenway as well, he's going to fit a need down on the fourth line. But man, did the Blackhawks pay a hefty price in order to bring those two on. But Kyle Davidson clearly wanted to improve his roster. He saw the moves that were going on around the league, and I guess he felt like he couldn't stand pat anymore doing nothing.
Right. Because part of why it's not just, you know, that they paid the fourth overall pick, it's Kyle Davidson could be right in all of that, but it still is a projection. Like he has been very good in both Colorado and Buffalo at times, as, you know, sometimes in Colorado he was the number two guy. Sometimes in Buffalo he was the number two or he was the number four. But he's never been leaned on, as you mentioned, as that number one. So we still don't really know what it would look like. Like there are some, you know, inconsistencies in his own end, and he has never really been a power play quarterback, so you can think he can do it well all you want. It's just, you know, again, you're trading for a guy that hasn't really done it on a large scale. So that is the risk. And I guess the other part of it, Jack, that Chicago might be getting criticized for is more what the league has done with picks like that. Like, I was taken aback. I did not know that it had been 18 years since somebody had traded a top five pick. And I almost feel like that fact has made it look worse for Chicago, too.
Yeah, I agree there, just because these types of picks don't get traded often whatsoever. And I forget exactly who in the hockey social media world posted it yesterday, but they said, you know, top five pick hasn't been traded in 18 years, and the player it gets traded for is Bowen Byram. And again, I don't really think that's a knock on Bowen Byram too much, because he is a darn good player. And the stuff that I just outlined, like, he is going to fit a nice hole on the Blackhawks back end. But there is still some wishfulness involved with this trade here. And again, the point that I went on earlier, you're going to have to pay Bowen Byram a significant amount of change. So yeah, there is definitely still some projecting here, and considering, again, what it also costs the Blackhawks potentially in terms of the rest of their offseason. I guess, you know, the NHL draft is tomorrow, but it just costs them that opportunity as well, I feel like, to bring in another legitimate top six forward for Connor Bedard for really the first time. So there's a couple of repercussions of this trade. And I just felt like the value might not have been necessarily maximized, but I also understand why Kyle Davidson was aggressive in this type of situation. I just thought it was kind of a peculiar choice at this point in time.
Jack Buschman, Locked On Blackhawks and Chicago Hockey Now on the West Tur Hotline. So Byram obviously is the main piece of the deal. The other defenseman that's going back is Louis Crevier to the Sabres. And that was part of why I wanted to get you on, is not a player that I'm super familiar with, other than knowing he's really, really tall. 6'8". And I know that he had a breakout year last year, but to what extent was it, you know, maybe breakout is too strong, but it felt like last year he took a step.
Honestly, I was really impressed with what we got from Louis Crevier last year, a guy who was selected in the 7th round just as kind of a flyer from the Blackhawks and had been in the pro system for a couple of years now, but I honestly never really gave him too much of a chance to become an NHL piece. He opened up this past season as the Blackhawks' number 7 defenseman, but because of the struggles from young guys like Artem Levchinov and Sam Renzel, he kind of got thrust into a larger role and really exceeded a lot of people's expectations in that spot. I think he really established himself as a sound penalty-killing defenseman. He's got that big body, as you talked about, 6'8". It's funny, Joe. I mean, I have been fortunate enough to interview Louis in the Blackhawks locker room a couple of times this last year, and sitting down on the stall, he's just about as tall as I am. So he's a massive He's a massive human being, and he's got a super long reach, and it felt like he kind of growed into his role as the season progressed and understood, you know, what he was being asked to do out there. And he also chipped in surprisingly well offensively. He's got a super powerful shot, and he's not afraid to use it. So not someone who will give you much in the offensive zone other than that shot, but can beat goaltenders because he's got a lot of power on it. So I feel like he's just kind of starting to scratch the surface and figure out that, you know, he can get it done at this level. But that was another thing that I really didn't love about this trade from a Blackhawks perspective, because Louis Crevier last year was one of their two best defensemen, and Bowen Byram more so known for his offensive abilities, and the Blackhawks have Renzel, Korchinski, Levchinov, who are all kind of known for that similar-ish style as well, whereas Crevier was like the stay-at-home defender. So I definitely still have some concerns over whether the Blackhawks defense as a whole will be able to defend well enough next season, especially now that Louis Crevier is gone, and he was a huge reason why they had the second best penalty kill in the NHL last year as well. So I think he's going to be someone that Buffalo fans are really going to learn to like. He's kind of quiet in the locker room, but he's got a good humor about him, but a super big body and knows how to use it in both offense and defense.
What would you envision his role being? The Sabres have an opening now in their top four with Byram out, and I kind of feel like Jarmo Kekalainen has sounded like he thinks there's another move to come that would fill that spot. Do you feel like Crevier is more third pair than not quite a Byram replacement, literally, but do you feel like him playing 17 minutes a night like he did in Chicago is probably where he would max out, that anything above that you might be asking for too much?
Yeah, I feel like third pairing is probably where you'd feel the most comfortable about him long term. Now, if someone, you know how hockey goes, someone happens to get injured, he can go in there and step in and do that role. And he, like I mentioned earlier, one of the better defenders for the Blackhawks last year. He was a -2 on a really bad Blackhawks team. Not that plus minus is always the most indicative stat, but I always look for outliers, and he was certainly an outlier on the Blackhawks team. So I think you feel most comfortable about him on the third pairing. He could fill in every now and then, but probably, you know, 17 minutes per night is probably what you're going to be looking for him out of maximum.
Last thing for you, Jack. We're just learning and getting more familiar with the options at number four. It still feels like the Sabres could flip that pick for maybe a Tuck replacement, something like that. But if they sit there at four, what were you thinking about for Chicago with the fourth pick, and what was available, and what maybe your favorite idea was for them?
Yeah, well, obviously, if Ivar Stenberg was going to make it to four, that's where I was going. But I was always kind of hard-pressed, despite what some of the mock drafts were saying, that he was going to make it outside of the top three. For me, from the Blackhawks' perspective, when they still had the fourth pick, I thought it was going to come down to either Chase Reed or Carson Carles. I ultimately, in the Lockdown NHL mock draft that we did, Joe, I mocked Carles to be the pick for the Blackhawks at four, just because, well, I do feel like Reed has a little bit higher upside than he does. Carles, I thought, would have fit the Blackhawks much better, just because they could have used a left-handed defenseman up until they acquired Bowen Byram. So that's why I went with Carles, but I do think Reed has the highest upside overall. And if you ask me to pick between one of those two, I'd probably go with Reed. I just lean Carles in the Blackhawks situation because he fit their organization a little bit better. But those were the two defensemen I think it's coming down to between who's going to be the first blue liner off of the board on Friday.
Yeah, we're with you, though. I feel like Stenberg has become like a, okay, how do we get him? Is there a chance he falls to four? Could we move up to San Jose at two and get him if they want a defenseman? So I feel like that seems to be the dream right now for Sabre fans, but it's just going to come down to – was the same logic for you why you thought he might have fallen out, that – because it would be what? San Jose wants defenseman, and then Vancouver's just going to take Manny Malhotra's son.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well. And okay. I really did believe the Sharks had good reason to go with a defenseman at number two, just because of their organizational need.
Right.
But man, passing on Ivar Stenberg, and then once they made that trade yesterday, once they traded Eklund, I think it was pretty much signed and sealed that that Stenberg's going to be their pick at two, assuming.
Right. Yeah, makes sense. Jack Bushman, Locked On Blackhawks, Chicago Hockey Now. Thanks, Jack, for joining us, and we'll talk down the road.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for having me on. Enjoy the rest of the day, guys.
You as well. Louis Crevier. All right, I'm in. I like the idea. He's cheap, too. That didn't come up in this conversation, but he makes less than $1 million per year, which, if you're talking about him being like a Logan Stanley replacement, some GM is going to give Logan Stanley $4 million a year because he's super tall and mean. Well, he has the perception of being mean. He didn't really show that here in Buffalo. But anyways, what is next for the Buffalo Sabres? 803-0550 is the phone number. If you've got an idea, a player that you would like to see the Sabres move that pick for, or maybe you have a favorite prospect by now. I think Chase Reed is becoming the guy that I'm seeing mocked to the Sabres the most. But we also have this Stenberg, who I'll admit, like, my research so far is the guys I know. We're going to talk to Chris Peters at 9, Mike Morial, the Cam Robinson, the guys from over at Elite Prospects, and everything I read about Stenberg, and then coupled with, you know, highlights. Let me throw the highlights on. What's this guy about in the SHL? And it's, you don't want to fall too in love with a guy because of YouTube highlights, but it feels like someone you should feel okay falling in love with. The idea of getting him and maybe trading something, if it's possible, to go up at number two. If San Jose is still willing to move off of that pick, then I think you'd do it. And as Jack pointed out, that feels less likely now because of this Eklund trade that the Sharks made in the last couple of days where they got another top 10 pick for a forward. So I don't know if the Stenberg conversation is still worth having, but I kind of hope that it's still out there because I think reading more and more about him, he's the one guy. I don't think this is Chase Reed. I don't think this is Bjork, the smaller center that they could draft it for. I don't think anybody else is coming in right away and helping you. And I think Stenberg would. It would be funny if we walked into next year with four young guys like that that you're counting on. I mean, already it's, well, Tuck leaving is okay because I've got, look at the young guys. I've got Osland, I've got Kulik, and I've got Hellenius. And if suddenly that list becomes four deep, I've got Hellenius, and I've got Stenberg, and I've got Kulik, and I've got Osland. Like, great. Two of those guys probably become dominant players. Just the odds would tell you that. And Stenberg might be more likely to do that than any of the other three. But I'm not sure if he's actually worth talking about anymore. I hope. We'll see. I looked yesterday, last night, like any more rumors about the Sharks and maybe they'd still be willing to move the pick. And Mike Greer did do media yesterday after he made the trade, sending William Eklund to Ottawa. And he said that he's gotten multiple offers for the number two overall pick in the draft. And, quote, including one that's real interesting. I don't know, that kind of sounds to me like I'm still open to it. I might still do it. He didn't say it in the past tense. He didn't say there was one that was real interesting. He said, no, there's one that's real interesting. And that could be more than just the Sabres. I mean, Nyes has been mentioned with San Jose as well. And I don't know, is there a trade between Toronto and San Jose where the Sharks give up the second pick? I don't think they do that for a forward. I know they just traded Eklund, but the story about the Sharks at number two, why it would come up in the first place that they would be a team that would move down from number two is they don't have the defensemen in their organization, not in the NHL lineup or not in the prospect pool. And Greer did confirm yesterday that they were very interested in Bo Byram. And John Buchagras said that there was a trade package on the table from San Jose that included both the 9th overall pick and the 27th pick. So they would have been sending the Sabres first-round pick back that they had just gotten in the Kesselring trade a week ago, and they would have been giving the 9th pick and a prospect. So they were offering 9, 27, and a prospect for Bo Byram, according to John Buchagras. And I think the Sabres made the right call there. I'd rather have the 4th pick. I'd rather have the 4th pick than the 9th pick and the 27th pick. And in addition, who knows? Was San Jose taking Jordan Greenway for you? Maybe not. Were they? I got the 45th pick. How different is 45 from 27? My answer to that would be less different than 4 and 9 are. I think the difference between 4 and 9 is much greater than the difference between 27 and 45. So I think Sabres made the right call. But what does that tell you? It tells you San Jose, they want this defenseman. They need a defenseman. And they were willing to go that far to get Byram. If we didn't know 4 was on the table for Byram, and they had traded Byram 2 nights ago for 9, 27, and a prospect, I would have felt perfectly fine about that. Would have liked that a lot. Would have liked it enough. The 4th pick just makes it, it puts it over the top. But if the Sharks want a defenseman, they still need one. They have not added anybody in the last 2 days. And just because they lost William Eklund doesn't mean they still don't have that need. So are they okay sitting at 9 and trusting that that guy is now the number one defenseman in my organization? The 9th pick might not show up for you for 3 years. We're going through this right now with Rodney Mertke. His development's going fine. He was an 8th overall pick. And he's got value, right? Like, the Blues have wanted him multiple times in trades, and other trades have been discussed with him involved. And he's not here yet. The Sharks might be more interested in the defenseman they'd get it for. Maybe that's 1 year and the guy is here. That's what the odds would show you. If you look at the history, we did this yesterday and broke down the last 15 fourth overall picks. Most of them, it's 1 year and then they arrive. And even you get down to pick 9, I know it's only 5 picks later, you're starting to talk about, like with Mertka, maybe it's 2 years. Feel like by getting the defenseman at 4 and instead of 9, your odds of the guy showing up 1 year earlier are a lot greater. So, would San Jose still be interested? And would that allow the Sabres to go get Stenberg? It's really interesting. And I might like that idea as much as some of these veteran trade ideas. I wouldn't say as much as the Robertson idea, but Nyes, yeah. I think at that point, if I knew tomorrow night they have 2 deals on the table, one is I could go up to 2 and get Stenberg, and it doesn't cost me an arm and a leg to move up 2 spots. And the other is I'm trading 4 plus something else to get Matthew Nyes. As much as I like Nyes, I think at that point I might take the Stenberg option. 803-0550 is the phone number. Playing around with some different possible scenarios for tomorrow that are all now possible because the Sabres pick 4th, which I still have to say out loud because I still kind of can't believe that Chicago did that. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock for the draft. We'll have full all-day coverage here on WGR. Brian Koziol and the gang down at the arena. And it's decentralized, so you won't have, like, GMs going across the tables to talk to each other. But we should be getting deals, and maybe we have to wait until they're on the clock before we get some type of move. When we come back, we have shots of audio. When we come back, excited for that. We will check in with Jeremy again, and also we have Chris Peters coming up at 9. We'll get in the weeds on some of these prospects more at 9 o'clock. It's Jeremy and Joe. Jeremy's off today. Owen off today as well. Stay tuned. This is WGR.
But they're tearing it down. Greenway.
Tage Thompson's next.
Greenway.
Look out, Thompson.
What about the grit?
No. Although somebody's probably there or just worried that there won't be reinforcements. With us now on the Westshore Hotline is not somebody who probably is panicking over the start to this particular phase of the offseason. Chad DeDominicis expected Buffalo. Am I right in assuming, Chad, that you know, you're not looking at these departures, Tuck and Byram, as panic-inducing moments?
No, not yet. We have a long way to go before people head to their cottages, so we're good for now.
Right. Well, how heavy of a lift do you think there is? I just admitted within the last half an hour or so that I hadn't spent a ton of time thinking about defenseman ideas until we learned that Byram wasn't likely to resign when Kekalainen talked about making him a priority and wanting to commit to him long term. They're like, okay, they're going to keep the band together. The superpower will be intact, but now there's a pretty big hole there. And I don't know. I'm not impressed with the list of guys that are thought to be available. That doesn't mean there aren't better ideas. What do you think about the lift they have to replace Byram?
Yeah, I mean, finding a top four defenseman is never easy. You know, for me, I'm a little bit more familiar because my approach, I think we talked about this before, going into the offseason, was getting a little bit more depth behind mm-hmm. that in case you didn't get a Byram contract signed or Byram or Samuelson fell back to earth on you a little bit to solidify. Mm-hmm. Now we're in a different situation where you have a hole that you now need to fill. Free agency, you know, there's not a lot of significant options there. The best one seems to be John Carlson, and by all accounts, he's going to be going to Tampa Bay at like 12:01 on July 1st. He's going to be one of those guys. And then beyond that, you know, there's not a lot there. Mm-hmm. There's some guys you can try to make work. And you hope that Owen Power can pull him up, or maybe they just go with Crevier as the guy that, you know, they put into that top four role, and hopefully Power can help and you're okay. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple guys, like I kicked around Adam Pellick as an idea from the Islanders. I know there's some talk that he could be available because they're pretty full on the left side of their blue line. So maybe he's an option. But yeah, I mean, it's never easy. And then you might get yourself caught in this game of what they try with Kesselring is, you know, getting a guy who's played mostly third pair minutes, and then you try to scale him to top 4 minutes, and you know, it doesn't always work. And again, maybe Crevier is the guy they're going to try this with, because he got some difficult minutes in Chicago, and maybe they think it can work.
How bad do you think the fit must have been with Kesselring for them to move him like they did for 7 spots in the draft, which isn't nothing? I think we talked about this then, even knowing or maybe expecting. Like I would think that Kekalainen would have had an inkling. He said today he was trying to convince Byram to re-sign all year long. So I doubt that his knowledge of what was likely to happen changed. The fact that they just kicked Kesselring out, despite maybe expecting that they might have to move on Byram, really says a lot about what Kesselring, where his standing was within this team.
Yeah, and Kekalainen talked a little bit about it today. He said that from the Sabre side, they were willing to be a little more patient with it. But from his side, you know, his side being Kesselring's, that, you know, they wanted a new opportunity. And so be it. That's fine. You know, and I get it. You know, it's a player who's an arbitration eligible restricted free agent. Teams these days don't love getting stuck in arbitration. Going through that, if he gets an award higher than what you'd want to pay, that messes with your salary cap. And then, like he talked about today, then you can't even trade that guy for a certain amount of time, and it becomes, you know, difficult to manage. So
right.
He was in the Lindy Ruff doghouse. He's still going to be your coach, and then he really didn't want to be here anyway. So, you know, why continue? And, you know, they made that move, and I get it. It makes sense for how they handle that.
With Chad DeDominicis, so what's the end? What's the big conclusion on Byram here after 2 years? Chad, the team took such a leap. We've had conversations with you about him that ranged from, oh my God, to, all right, well, this is playable. I mean, would you look at what they paid for him and what they got out of him and then what they got for him? That seems like a pretty good process.
Yeah, I think all in all, you know, you got to be pretty happy with what you got over the 2.5 years. You know, I think in this year in particular, it didn't start off great, but I think he played well for most of the season. And you say you can even argue maybe had his best year of his career. So you got that out of him before he left. So, you know, I have nothing bad to say about the player on his way out. I think he was a key part of what they did last season, and he should be commended for that. You know, if they would have kept him for a reasonable contract, I probably would have been okay with it to keep that top four together. But, you know, we're getting up to 10, maybe even $11 million, yeah, seeing where that Blackhawks deal is going to end. You know, I have no business in that for arguably, like we talked about this last time, I think your fourth best defenseman, perhaps, to be paid that much seems a little nutty. So it didn't work. And, you know, to his credit, he wanted to be a number one defenseman. He wanted those top minutes, and he's going to get it in Chicago.
Yeah.
Best of luck, and he's getting what he asked for, and, you know, we'll see how it goes for him.
Yep. How about how much did the fourth pick being involved in that trade, being a part of the return, and Green, like, did your brain kind of short out last night when you found out Greenway too? I mean, fourth overall for Bowen Byram. I mean, I like this player a lot, and I think he did me. I thought he was their best player in the Boston series myself, and it's just an opinion. But I think he mattered a lot. But still, the fourth overall pick is, I'm just stunned by them getting the value. But at the same time, Chad, I'm a little bit torn because I almost immediately want the fourth pick to become some 25-year-old player who can help them right now.
Yeah, I had to check on it a few times when I heard about it last night. Just this year, first round, fourth overall, yeah. So, I mean, when you listen to the story behind it, why Chicago did what they did, I mean, okay, I mean, I guess I kind of see it from their perspective, but it's still kind of bananas to me. But yeah, the Greenway part, that one really threw me. Like, they're taking a cap dump too. Like, and then when I, you know, as I'm going through, I'm like, okay, well, 20 is going back. And then when I got the final news of what the full offer was, I was like, oh, they're sold Case, so they're keeping their first round pick. All right, so this is awesome. So yeah, I mean, sitting here now, a lot can change. And as you've seen, you know, that every year the insiders say this is going to be a crazy summer, and it feels like they actually got it right for once.
Yep.
You know, that could the pick move? Maybe. I still think, from listening to Kekalainen today, a little bit of what I know, what they're thinking, they're probably going to make that pick. It also, I think, helps that the draft is in Buffalo, so now they can pick in the top five in their own city. Now, I'm not going to say that was the, you know, driver behind doing this, but it certainly helped. So, yeah, you know, I know people probably don't love to hear that, because this is a team who was a shot away from going to the Eastern Conference Final and, you know, want to take a step back. And I'm not saying they're going to, but I still think, I think it's more likely that we would see 20 be moved than four. Now, if they find something, Jason Robertson, something crazy falls on them, then I don't think they're opposed to it. But I would say, sitting here right now, that I think it's more likely than not that they're going to pick at four.
Do you happen to have a draft pick idea that you like the most? I will cop to not paying attention to the top names. Paul said the same thing. We talked to Paul last week when he was at the Combine. It's like, it's weird being at the Combine and just talking to players that the Sabres will never get a chance at. Well, maybe that's not true anymore.
Record scratch, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing for me. Like, I usually go to that Combine every year, and I'm like, ah, they're picking 27th. Like, I have a schedule conflict anyways, whatever, to be fine. And then, oh, okay, we're picking top four. Awesome. You know, I'm not going to sit here and pretend that I really I know a lot about the top five guys. I'm more leaning on people. Chase Reed, the defenseman, is maybe the one I'm most familiar with. I really liked him during the World Juniors this year. 6'2", right side defenseman. You know, there's some things in there that you can question defensively. But I like him. On our site last night was part of the article stuff we put out. Viggo Bjork was somebody that Austin, who's a draft guy on our site, really likes. He's a shorter, smaller centerman, but he's fun. He's very, very good. That could be a good one. But there's, you know, there's Caleb Malhotra if he makes it, but it seems like he's going to Vancouver at three. So, yeah, I mean, realistically, it's weird. Whenever the Sabres are in this spot at one, they draft the defenseman. Now they're sitting here at four, and how the board's going to go, if it's going to be McKenna going one, and then Steamer going two, and then Malhotra three, well, you're going to be sitting there with a bunch of defensemen looking you in the face. So it's going to be Reed, it's going to be Carl, there's a couple other guys. Albert Smith is the guy I like from Austria. Maybe Latvia, one of the two, I can't remember. But, yeah, it, they're going to have a defenseman staring them in the face again, but
yeah,
you know, maybe they do go forward. We'll see.
I came across a kid that played at North Dakota, I believe, in college, Verhoef, who was in the Western League, coached by James Patrick. And like, yeah. So I'm trail of breadcrumbs, right? I feel like Patrick and Ruff are probably still very tight. So I would feel like Patrick's probably been chirping Lindy's ear about this kid, you know, irrespective of the draft or whatever. But they're in a position where they could probably do that if they want to. It might be a little early, but it depends on which projection you're looking at. So like he's 6'4" and said to be a good all around and a good puck mover and all that. So like I wonder about that. I would think they probably have as much background as you could need on a guy if they want it, because of the relationship Ruff has with James Patrick.
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, there's a lot of guys that can go there, and really I'm not going to be mad at the pick. You know, I know if it's a defenseman, it's kind of an eye roll, like, okay, another high defense pick, but pick your best guy on the board. You know, you look at some of the draft picks they've made in the first round the last few years, it's hard to dispute with them hitting on those picks. So if they think that guy's the best on the board, then, you know, I'm going to believe in that.
Chad, let's pay our respects to Alex Tuch as he leaves for Washington, reportedly, on a sign-and-trade deal. Never seemed to me, or I think to Bulldog, and probably yourself, that the Sabres were, you know, close to keeping him, even if they, you know, wanted to. He meant a lot to what happened here. I mean, I think needless to say, in the last few years, he's an, if not also Byram, but Tuck especially, I think, is an important part of the story.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I'm not going to spin any stories that I'm not going to miss him. And not just on the ice, I think off the ice too. I know a lot of players in that room looked up to him, and even some of the guys in their leadership group leaned on him a lot. So that's going to be a big loss, and it's something they're going to have to figure out how they're going to deal with that. They'll have to have internal guys step up and, you know, on and off the ice too. But yeah, it's not a surprise. You know, a couple of weeks ago, it seemed like we've pretty much, you know, they've exhausted their effort. And, you know, I can say, I know LeBron had a tweet about it too, but I heard they made a, you know, probably their best offer to him recently, and it just still, you know, didn't get there. And that's when they started exploring the sign and trade that I mentioned a few times here over the last week or so, and, you know, culminated today going to the Capitals, which a little bit of a surprise for me. I thought he was going to go west, but sure. Washington it is. So, yeah, you know, you got to figure out a way to replace that for sure. That's production. And you have some guys internally, some younger guys. I would like to get a veteran there to maybe replace that and not just lean so much on younger guys. But yeah, it's certainly going to be, you know, a big hole for this team to fill outside of that, you know, that defenseman too.
So you've already said you think that they'll pick at four rather than put that in something really big here between now and Friday night. Then I don't know what, where will they go? Do you think they need to? I feel like the Byram hole's the bigger hole is what I want to say here, because at least the forwards, I'm not eager to just say let the kids do it either. I'd like to have a man that can grow a beard replace Alex Tuck, but there are at least reasonable candidates, I think, that you could hope could do the job slash expect, whereas on D, they just don't have a ready-made dude at all, really, you know, unless Mertka hit some sort of accelerator in his development, which I've not heard anything about. I think that's the bigger hole. So, like, I don't know, is it, how armed and ready are they to do this? Is you said 20 maybe is you know, a good asset anyway, and maybe they can do that. Do you think they have a big move in them is basically what I'm trying to ask you here.
Yeah, I think they got one more. What that's going to be is going to be difficult. I agree with you that I think the defenseman is a little bit more difficult to replace, and that'll probably have to be in the trade market. I mean, for forward, there's not a lot of great free agent options, but if you wanted to dip into it, you can. There's Zuccarello, there's, you know, some other guys. If you wanted to go there for a year to kind of pull you along, you could find that too. That won't kill you on the cap. You know, there's some options there from a free agent standpoint at forward. But yeah, defenseman, they're probably going to have to make a trade. I think they can, you know, I don't want to be crazy in a sense, but really I think they could do whatever they wanted. They have the assets to be able to play in any sort of game as long as a player wants to come here, of course. They can get any conversation they want. So, you know, we'll see. It's hard for me right now to box them into what I think they're going to do. And I think you're right. They have nothing behind them. And Mirka for sure isn't an option there. I wonder if they pick a defenseman in the top five that makes Mirka more tradable. I mean, they basically almost traded them twice at the deadline. So right. I wouldn't be surprised if they do that again here. I mean, they have the pieces to really do whatever they like. And I'm confident they're going to do one more, whether that's a forward, a defenseman, or even a goaltender. It's hard to pigeonhole them right now to figure out where they're going to go.
There's been some chatter today connecting them to Vincent Trocheck of the Rangers. I'm not sure. I feel like that's a Ryan McLeod, Sam Carrick spot. I guess you could divest yourself of McLeod, I suppose. I don't really see a fit there. Do you?
No, I think you're going to pay a lot for duplicating skill set.
Right.
No, he's just not the guy he was a few years ago. There's still a few years on that contract. I don't remember how old he is exactly, but the production was there this year with the Rangers, so I get that part of it. But just, I don't know, am I going to pay a hefty price for a guy that only thing different he gives me than what I have is he wins more faceoffs? Like, I don't think it's worth to pay enough for it. I think you're then, I don't know, you're pigeonholing into a weird spot, and I'm certainly not going to give up McLeod to get him. I think McLeod's, you know, better suited for this team than Trocheck would be. I have significant concerns about his foot speed slowing down in this system on this team. So I hope that's not what their plan is.
Same here. Really, yeah.
That's a bad idea.
32 years old, 5.625 runs through 2029. That's the contract there. So I'm a hard no on that.
Okay.
Yeah, same for me. I never really liked that idea in the beginning when it was brought up.
Couple of quick ones if you have time, Chad. What about goaltending? What do you think they want to do? Leave it alone?
It's tough. Listening to Kekalainen today, you would say that they're probably going to leave it, but I don't know if he's just playing the game or he's really okay with that.
Yeah.
I know that they were on Hellebuck a little bit, or at least had discussions. It's possible they had discussions and then it's nope, not going to be able to do that. And, you know, they decided they're just going to keep their goaltender. That's very possible. Things can change. I think I'll sit with, they're probably just going to go with their group they have, sitting here right now. And I'm okay with that. You know, we've had conversations on that. I'm fine. I don't need to pay the big assets. I mean, the argument I could make for it now that I touched about in your article, I did when we knew Byram was going, well, if you can't replace Byram and you can't replace Tuck, what is one thing you can do? Well, you can get one of the best goaltenders in the league to kind of cover up some of those holes for you.
Yeah.
So that's the way to get around it. So I could understand that logic of it, but you know, we'll see. It again kind of seems like if Hellebuck's going to go, you know, Florida's back in this now that it's going to be, oh, okay. So he's going to end up going to one of those three teams that all these American guys want to go to at the end of the day. So,
right.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, the way you described the goalie move, if there were to be one, is kind of how I hope they are viewing it. Like, can't do this, can't do that. Well, we got to do something. Well, you know, we're a couple. Okay, let's do that then. And I know that's not great process. And, of course, they would never tell us that was actually the process. But
yeah.
I would hope that they are prioritizing the skaters more than replacing the skaters more than the goaltending myself. So.
I agree.
Chad, one more for me. Kekalainen, just in general, your experience covering him, writing about him, and just watching the changes with the Sabres in the last year or so. I mean, I'm ready to vote with this. I love the sort of his persona, and I mean, he's active, and we have this. Yeah. Here's Bowen Byram, who was excellent on a team that just shocked everybody and restored the Sabres' dignity, if you will. And like, okay, he's gone. I mean, I respect that. I know there were reasons. So, and he wasn't my favorite player anyway, as we talked about, but. What is your vibe on Yarmo?
Yeah, very straightforward. He'll tell you what he's thinking. That was always the kind of the vibe I got from talking to people in Columbus, even when they hired him as the advisor. He will tell you what he thinks. He will tell the players what he thinks. And we're seeing that play out. I mean, I think we've seen that today on Tuck and Byram. He was very honest on both of those situations. So that's always good, because then you can really know what he's thinking. He's not, and that's why I get away from the, I don't know if he's really playing the game on goalies, because he doesn't do that. He just tells you what he thinks. So yeah, that's good, and he's going to take his chances. He's going to take his swings. You know, you're not always going to hit a home run, like maybe you did with Byram. He might take a big swing, and it might not work out, but, you know, I'd rather take those cuts than kind of sitting on your hands and hoping and praying you get some, you know, money ball stuff to work for you, so.
Right.
I think it kind of cuts both ways. I think he's a very analytical guy too. So I know that plays to my, you know, side of things, of course, which is good. I think he truly is trying to look at this team in the short term, in the long term vision. Because you remember a lot of, you know, last season when he talked, he always said, yeah, this team is doing well, but he always threw it in. There's still a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he's trying to take that look too. Maybe the Byram thing is part of that. We're gonna do a move for the future, but we're also gonna use some of these assets to improve in the short term too. So I think we'll see that.
You just alluded to, like, maybe Hellebuck ends up in Florida, and you know, on one of the three teams that all these American guys want to end up on. How much of a problem, if any, do you think the league has in this department? with guys, like, you know, calling their shots. I mean, this is how, you know, the NBA and the NFL have worked like this for many years. Hockey players generally stay in their lane, but I think once they started peeking their heads up and, you know, forcing things, I think they realized the fallout's not that hard to live with. And it really, maybe it doesn't even exist, only in the city that you've spurned, right? So I get it and I understand it, but, I mean, as a hockey fan, we had a call early this week after the Tkachuk thing. Like, do we have a problem now? Like, is Florida just going to get all the good guys? I mean, I know there's limitations to it, but I feel like if Hellebuck were to end up there on top of what happened with Tkachuk, a lot of hockey fans and a lot of markets are going to be raising their hands going, like, what are we doing here?
Yeah. I mean, and the thing we're going to see after the draft is what happens with Werenski, too. That's going to be another one.
Right.
So... You know, I think Pandora's out of the box a little bit with the trade protection that happened a few years ago. Like, everybody gets it now. So, you know, the NHL GMs kind of put themselves in that position to give the players so much power to dictate where they want to go. The rising cap is now contributing to that because now everybody has cap space. Where before, it's like, I don't know, how is Vegas going to fit this guy in? They have to put three guys on long-term injury reserve. And it's not a thing anymore teams have to do. They have the cap space to make it work. I think we're headed towards an issue. I think it's going to be interesting which side decides they're going to run things. Do the GMs get together and say, we're going to stop letting the inmates run the asylum and not so much, you know, fold to these requests, but, you know, how is that going to look for you if you don't have happy players? And I don't know. It's tough. The NBA found their way out of it eventually. So maybe it's just a period. We kind of got to sit here and just let it play out. But yeah, I mean, it's beyond those guys. You know, you got Werenski, you got Matthews next year potentially, and, you know, thank goodness the Sabres made the playoffs, or we'll probably be having a Tage conversation right now too.
Right.
So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Chad Dedeminisis expected Buffalo for all the best on the latest with these trade rumors and moves the Sabres are making. Who's coming up on the farm from Rochester? All of it's a great sight. Chad, thanks for your time as always. Enjoy draft weekend.
Yes, thanks. You too, guys.
Thank you. Chad Dedeminisis right there on the West Her Hotline. Paul Hamilton coming up at 5. Mike Schoep and the Bulldog here. What are your thoughts? Bowen Byram traded. So too Alex Tuch, who we didn't really expect back, but now that seems official.
Right. Third round pick coming back, by the way, which is pretty good by those standards. Yeah.
So do we have a third day in a row where things happen for the Sabres? What are we thinking?
Probably. I mean,
probably.
I'm at the crafts table. Let's stay hot. But also, Boulevard of Broken Dreams. I don't know, man.
It's raining out. It makes sense.
No. The rain does not match the vibe right now. It's raining. Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm here to tell you that the musical choice needs to be less emo, more poppy a little bit. Vibes are high. We're at the craps table. We're rolling for a third day in a row with a trade for the Sabres, okay?
Yeah, because the Tuch one counts as a trade. I mean, we all kind of knew he was going away. They get a third-round pick in 27. They get a bottom six forward. They get the rights to Kampf. So.
Yeah, David Kampf. But also, the Benson deal is done now.
Yeah.
That is taken care of. Your checklist is done.
And by the way, Zach Jones, Derek Kramer, Northtown Automotive X-Point Show, we can finally officially say like how much cap space the Sabres have going into probably draft day tomorrow, $13.7 million.
You say that as if they're not going to make a move today.
I know, but we were waiting on the Benson stuff forever.
We were waiting. Yeah, actually, so, it took a week. So it took a legitimate week.
After Byram leaves and Greenway leaves, it was still like, yeah, but you got to subtract 7, maybe 7.5. It ultimately ends up being 7.5. It took a little while for us to actually get there where we could officially, like, okay. And then also Puckpedia yesterday, for not that long, but a little bit, Alex Tuch's contract was still on the Sabres. So we were waiting for all that stuff. But it has been a very, very busy week, not only the NHL, but for the Buffalo Sabres. It has been a very, very fun week. In a couple minutes, we're going to talk with Travis Yost of TSN, get all of his thoughts. Because, to be fair, we could have talked to Travis last week when Brady Tkachuk goes to Florida. And then a lot more happened. And now here we are. There's the draft tomorrow in Buffalo, which should be awesome. The Sabres do have the fourth overall pick, which I think has made that event even more exciting for Sabres fans, even though I've been somebody that has maintained. Yeah, but introducing Robert Thomas or Jason Robertson, also equally as exciting as the fourth overall pick, it is still a top five pick. You have not actually picked there in a while. And
it's funny, when you were bad, you got pushed to like seven.
Yeah, right. Like, you know, Benson's what, ninth overall?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, Mirka is ninth overall, I believe, as well, although the first defenseman taken in last year's draft, so there is something there.
Still ninth overall.
It's still ninth overall. It's funny. Like, you haven't really picked this high since, like, Owen Power, Rasmus Dahlin, Sam Reinhart, Jack Eichel. Like, that kind of run there. Those are your top-tier picks, and it's a pick you get after an 109-point season. It's just a lot is going on for the Sabres. A lot of fun is happening. We've also got a ton going on in the World Cup. The United States plays later tonight at 10, although it is a completely meaningless game for the United States. We'll see if Christian Pulisic, though, gets any run against Turkey, because he has not played in a game and a half, because he's subbed off at halftime in the first game, so we'll see about that. We are starting to get more than likely and or just full-on confirmed matchups in the round of 32. Canada, by the way, is going to take on South Africa in the standalone game on Sunday at 3 o'clock. That's the one round of 32 game we do know, although the United States very likely are going to be taking on Bosnia and Herzegovina in their matchup just under a week from now, next Wednesday. But we're going to start today with, of course, hockey. Travis Yost coming up here in just a couple of minutes. And a lot is going on. As mentioned, we have the Zach Benson deal done, $7.5 million, a seven-year deal for him. And then Alex Tuch does get his trade to Washington, and his deal winds up being that 8 years, $10.5 million.
It's kind of funny. You said a couple minutes. No, we've got Travis Yost of TSN on the Western Hotline. Oh, right now, Travis, I messaged you on Monday, and everything has happened since.
Yeah, it's like Sabres have made about 17 moves, I think, in the last 3 days. So, yeah, it's been a busy – and by the way, like, feels like we're on the precipice of more moves too, right? With given how many outflows there have been from a contender, it feels like we're not even close to done here in Buffalo.
We're not even close here to done in Buffalo. And furthermore to that, it seems like it's a major thing now every day over the past couple of days – where let's just start there. Bo Byram for the fourth overall pick, as well as a second rounder, another defenseman coming in. The Sabres shed the cap space of Jordan Greenway, though I think Chicago was just plainly happy to take him as a bottom six forward as well. But the impact, the wavelengths that it sent through the hockey media was pretty impressive.
Yeah, because there's a couple reasons there. I think people are kind of looking past the trade. The moment it was made, immediately people said, okay, we have a quality Sabres team that still at the moment had a decision point on Alex Tuch. Obviously, that's been then subsequently resolved with the signing trade in Washington. But, you don't expect division-winning caliber teams with some cap space and several, let's say, impact players, you know, between Tuch and Byram, just to start those two, leaving. You don't expect them to do anything other than reload. Now, I get there's some cap gymnastics here that they're going to have to pull off. The Jeff Skinner buyout certainly doesn't help this year. There's a couple things they've got to work through. But that Bo and Byram trade with Chicago specifically, you make that trade 11 times out of 10. If I could grade that an A++, I would have for the Sabres. I thought it was a brilliant move by Yarmo, and maybe I'm actually giving him a little bit of credit, because I can't for the life of me understand Chicago's perspective here. You know, even if they say Greenway is a depth player that can have an impact there, okay, I think that's debatable, but fine, so be it. Not a cap dump. They gave up a pretty significant haul for a defenseman that they then subsequently paid a fortune to. They basically need Byram, and Byram's a good player, don't get me wrong, but you heard Kyle Davidson talking about it. They basically need him to anchor a first pairing for several years forward, just to even make some degree of sense of this trade. The fourth overall pick is not insignificant, and I think the only one visceral negative reaction from some Sabres fans fairly is, hey, like, we've spent 150 years to finally get a competitive roster, and now we're adding the fourth overall pick via trade and losing an impact player. How does this make sense? And I'll tell you how it makes sense. Number one, if you can get the fourth overall pick, you're going to be able to draft an impact player. Worst case scenario, more likely scenario, and what I am confident the Sabres front office has been doing the last couple days is figuring out, okay, how do we par the fourth overall pick, which every single team in the league is going to want in some capacity, how do we parlay this into either a bigger trade or at least find something that we can dangle around the league to replace one of the two? I do think they're a little more insulated on the defensive side. I mean, the blue line depth and just the caliber of players on the back end, they could afford losing one. I think that's a little less so in the forward group. I do think they need to add there, whether it's in free agency or via trade. So, that's what I'm watching here at this point. You know, you've got just a little bit of time here before they really are at a critical decision point. They need to use that pick or trade it. But I still think there's a pretty good chance that pick is gone in some way, shape, or form as part of a trade package.
And Travis, I'm finding myself as we're, now into the days after the trade, what to do with the fourth overall pick. And I'm finding myself having equal dreams of Jason Robertson or Chase Reed. And I don't really know where to go with it. I mean, look, you lost Byram and you lost Tuck. I don't think anyone's going to say on paper the Sabres, as of today, are better than the team that lost to Montreal in Game 7. But boy, I mean, they've got some avenues here. And it doesn't seem like the Robertson stuff, not necessarily for the Sabres, but just the fact that he won't be a Dallas star, that doesn't seem to be cooling down at all.
Yeah, Robertson's leaving Dallas. Now, granted, right, this guy's not even Olympian, so he shouldn't really cost all that much.
But right.
I mean, in all seriousness, like, we're talking about like a top 10, bona fide top 10 goal scorer in the league. I think you can make an argument he's as good of a goal scorer as Tage Thompson, just for people who may not watch Stars hockey as much. I mean, this guy is absolutely electric. And if the save, I just tweeted this like 20 minutes ago by coincidence. If there is an opportunity for the Sabres to add Jason Robertson, you do that every single time. You're talking about a guy actually in the peak of his playing prime, right? He's 26, going to be on 27 next year. You've got to assume at least he's got about three more years of his bona fide playing prime. And all we've ever seen from this guy is ho-hum 35, 40 goals every single season. I mean, he's a dream addition. I do think he's going to be expensive. He should be expensive. And, one thing that I think people, including myself, need to wrap their hands around, some of these deals that we're seeing around the league are colossal and almost make me nauseous. But the famous four words, the cap is rising and teams are going to lean into that more and more heavily. I think if you're going to extend yourself this summer, you want a slam dunk player, especially a slam dunk player who you're not going to pay for past performance. And that's why Robertson is so alluring to me. He's young. He fits well within this broader core. He's a freakish goal scorer from the wing, which is what the Sabres sorely need. I think that is the most logical. I would put the Sabres on the short list of most logical landing spots for him as a player. And then from the Sabres' perspective, I mean, I think he's at the top of the list of like, look, until you say no and you make a trade or sign a trade with someone else or you move him elsewhere, I'm not going to let you go without making our best and final. So whether it's and by the way, that trade may not even need to require the fourth overall pick, depending on how it's structured. So, like, there is so much going on. And I think we even talked about this heading into the offseason. I thought the two teams that I thought would be extremely active for lots of reasons, cap reasons, roster addition reasons, were the Sabres and the Mammoth. And I still think that we've already seen it from the Sabres. Mammoth have been a little more quiet, but I still think both of those teams are very, very, very busy heading into this weekend.
Travis, I'm really starting to think our connection is just get Jason Robertson to Buffalo. that's pretty much where it started with us, and it seems like almost every time we have you on, you and I get to at some point get Jason Robertson to Buffalo. And the difference, though, with what one season makes, seeing Jarmo Kekalainen getting to work, making these moves, getting aggressive into the trade market already within 1 year. It's not a pipe dream like it was when we first brought up the concept a year ago, Travis. The fact that the Sabres are an aggressive team. They are a team that can now be seen, hey, we're going to make moves just because. And hearing Jarmo Kekalainen saying yesterday, yeah, agents are telling me that Buffalo's getting off of some no-trade places now.
That doesn't surprise. One of the things that absolutely drives me nuts when we talk about, you know, a lot of this is somewhat a Canadian media thing. In my opinion, it's fugazi by and large. But you hear this concern about, oh, everyone's going to these tax havens. Everyone wants to go to these few states where, and it's like, look, I'm not disagreeing that the net tax benefits are not positive. To play in Florida versus to play in Toronto, I get it. It's very different. But by and large, and I don't know if you guys, this might sound crazy, competitive athletes want to win. They don't want to get their butts kicked every single week of every single year. And the reason why players are flocking to Florida and Vegas is because Florida and Vegas win. Carolina wins. Colorado wins. And it's not lost on me that the teams that always appear to be on no trade list, by and large, are just the poorly run teams or the worst teams in the league. If you're a high-end player, especially with the way the CBA is structured, where you don't really get paid to maybe 6, 7, 8 years into your career, unless teams find, you know, an aggressive RFA extension and money in that route, unless you're really looking for that opportunity by the time you're in your mid-20s. And when you sign that deal, yes, you're looking for the most amount of money. No, the obvious point's obvious, but you've got a hard cap league where you've got inherent constraints that allow every team in the league to bid on you. The last thing on earth you want to do is sign a contract with a team with a crazy owner that wins 15 games a year. I mean, guys just don't want to do that. And by the way, look around industry. Look at everyone's careers outside of sports in the United States, tech, biomedical, education, it doesn't matter. Why do people leave jobs and why do people find new jobs? It's who you work with and who you work for. It's really not much different in NHL circles. The one big difference is the money pot is a lot bigger, but I just always balk at this idea that, oh, it's about the taxes. No, it's about Vegas wins 45 games every year. They've been in the Stanley Cup 3 of the last 9 years. Players want to be in that environment. So it's not lost on me that as Buffalo has started winning, teams are like, hey, you know what? Buffalo's a pretty cool market to play in, that or players for that matter. That doesn't surprise me at all.
I think what has calmed me on that, Travis, almost immediately following Brady Tkachuk going to Florida, and look, he gave the trade list of teams he would go to. We all know it was exactly one team that he was willing to go to eventually. But it helped that then following that moment, and of course Larkin also giving out his and everyone kind of talking about the Team USA, they all want to go play together. A bunch of trades happened. A bunch of player movement happened to teams that you maybe wouldn't have thought about. So even for me, as somebody that does get a little worried about that, you know, us as Sabres fans, as we're getting good, Colton Parayko says no. I know the context. He still said no at the trade deadline, which doesn't feel great. Immediately you had player movement, and you immediately had guys going to teams that you maybe wouldn't think about.
And that to me is the reinforcing mechanism here. Like, it's not just that winning begets winning and winning becomes alluring for players around the league. When you've got a hard cap and it's a zero-sum game for how dollars are allocated, the markets typically will balance themselves, right? So, yeah, a player like Colton Parayko may say no. By the way, I still think that was a good outcome for the Sabres. A player like Colton Parayko may say no to Buffalo. But, like, again, if Buffalo continues winning here, and by the way, like, let's look just, you know, around the corner here. For how was it, 2 decades? I'm not playing in Buffalo for the Bills. It's cold. They're terrible. They win 4 games. Boom, they get a superhero quarterback. They start winning 11, 12 games every year, and now free agents sign there, and everyone wants to be traded there. And it's like, oh, I don't hear anyone balking at the taxes in New York State. It's like, yeah, because the guys are willing to pay an extra $200,000, you know, over the course of their, you know, over the course of a year on a given contract, if they can play with Josh Allen, because guess what? Their following contract, not only do they have a chance to win in Buffalo, their following contract, rising tide lifts boats. So maybe those numbers look a lot better playing with Josh Allen versus some random quarterback in the Midwest. And it's really true across all 4 of the North American leagues. I guess I just balk at this. You know, I think we've really overweighted incorrectly how much state taxes really impact the decision here. I think it's tertiary at best. And to your point, the more the Sabres win, the more they're going to be alluring to players around the markets.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what they do here, because tomorrow, obviously, you know, we always get major deals within the 2 days of the NHL draft. So I would imagine the Sabres will be players. If not with four, they will probably do it with 20. Because, Travis, the other thing that the Sabres do here is, throughout the course of the week, with three players that we know at some point being confirmed by Yarmo or just assuming otherwise, three players that we're not going to sign long-term with Buffalo in Michael Kesselring, Alex Tuch, and Bo Byram, he takes all of that and flips it for premium assets, moving from 27 to 20, getting pick 4 and 45, getting a third-round pick and a sign-and-trade for Tuch, who was going to walk in UFA. It seems like it's a very impressive stretch, despite the fact that the Sabres haven't really added much to their roster. It's still an impressive stretch throughout this course of 1 week where the Sabres are getting assets for players that they knew well and comfortably were not going to be here.
Yeah, and I got to be honest. I think they made the right call on Alex Tuch. I know it's painful. Like, you're like, forget, but let's put Byram to the side for a second. Like, you lose Alex Tuch in your lineup. I mean, he's a quality second line winger, and that is immediately, first off, it's immediately hard to replace. And even just, you know, how much you weight this, I think that's subject to debate, but like, culturally seemed like a great fit with the Sabres. He loved playing there, but look at what Washington paid him. I mean, that contract is colossal. And it's like, if the Sabres, you know, to me, it's like, you got to play devil's advocate with yourself. You know, for anyone who's like, oh, the roster's worse today because we lost Tuch, it's like, I concede that wholly. On the other hand, were you willing to go 70, 80 million deep on Alex Tuch and really, given the Skinner situation and really where they have to allocate the rest of their money, were you willing to basically say, hey, Alex Tuch is our big bet for this summer and we're just going to tinker at the margins at this point? I don't know. I think you really have to reckon with what the remaining roster building budget would have looked like to keep him in tow. And, you know, I always think, you know, free agency is pretty thin this year and, you know, there aren't a ton of great options, but like, you know, the three of the names, you know, whether it's Trouba, Mantha, Boone Jenner, who obviously Yarmo has got connection with, some of these guys, you know, there's going to be overpayments across the board, but if there's an opportunity for the Sabres to add a guy on a reasonable term deal, and he's a middle six forward, or he can actually backfill, you know, they bump and backfill on the blue line and bring in a guy like Trouba. There's an opportunity where they can kind of maybe make some of the parts greater than the whole by adding a couple smaller pieces, even if a big fish like Robertson doesn't pan out. So the thing to me, and why I bring up all, it seems like, oh, you know, Trav seems like a madman. He's got 100 different ideas for Yarmo. I actually think that's the point. The Sabres have an opportunity here where they likely have a very broad summer plan contingent on who they can sign and what that number looks like. And it's kind of the benefit of now suddenly having valuable picks that are tradable or draftable. Now suddenly a pretty good, healthy amount of cap space where they can deploy that money. And you now have the stink off of no one's going to come to Buffalo because they literally cannot make the playoffs. I mean, I think the Sabres were impressive this year, and I think players around the league recognize this isn't the same old Sabres. Now it's incumbent on the front office to make sure that they, quote-unquote, can run it back into the playoffs. But, like, the whole dynamic of this market has changed. And so, you know, I'd be lying to you if I me or anyone said, hey, this is what I think the Sabres are going to do, because I think they do have a plan A, plan B, plan C, and I know that's not necessarily fun to hear, but that's the benefit of having all these picks, all the cap space, and playing with the big fish, or maybe thinking about maybe it's a few smaller pieces that we add and aggregate up from there.
I mean, it may not sound sexy, but Travis, it does to me. They finally are and sound like an organization that actually knows what they're doing and are forward thinking, and you can trust the process, because for years you just kind of looked at them and went, I mean, I hope, and then that was kind of all you could do. One name, though, I do want to bring up as maybe a Tuch replacement. Kind of, because same thing with Jason Robertson, the trade talks have not gone away, and to be perfectly honest, I'm kind of surprised. Like, I love the player, and I'm surprised that he would ever leave, but Matthew Nyes with Toronto. I know it's Tree Living is the GM when he, I guess, almost makes the move to Montreal, but even now the new GM and John Chayka, those rumblings seem to have not gone away yet.
Yeah, they haven't at all, and I think the Chayka in Toronto has just been a continuance of that. You know, the nice thing was interesting. There were rumors around the trade deadline that, you know, he was being shopped. And I think there was some skepticism about that. Then there were verified rumors that he was being shopped. And then of course we get the story that, you know, he was basically traded to Montreal in the 25th hour. So I have to believe that, you know, they are, if nothing else, lukewarm on long-term him staying there as a player. Maybe there's some financial concern there. By the way, they have a mess on their hands, too, because I don't care what anyone says about the situation, how confident they feel he's going to stay, how confident they feel he's going to rebound. Like, the Austin Matthews, like, billion-dollar question, can he get back to the player he once was? If so, he's a top-three player in the league. Or is the best behind him? And now Toronto has a tough decision. Or option C is Austin Matthews back to being a great player, but maybe doesn't want to play in Toronto because there's a contract scenario situation shaking out with him in the next couple of years. Like that to me is a giant unresolved problem in Toronto, and I think that does tie directly back to what they do with Nyes here. You know, one of the interesting things I think with Nyes is, he really does play stylistically this super up-tempo, very physical brand of game as a left winger. Like, he fits in like a glove with Buffalo, the way Buffalo plays. Now, is he a better player than Robertson? Unequivocally, no, right? If Robertson's going to find the back of the net much more. But Nyes stylistically, very physical. He just plays the way the Sabres played last year. And I feel like in terms of like lineup fit, he would be as good as it gets. I think he's got a little over 50 goals over the last two seasons. So he does have the scoring touch there too. And he would play, you know, he'd play on the Sabres first or second line. And so he's going to get a quality teammate bump in Buffalo as well. So I think that is a very interesting option. I think the question there, you know, at least with Dallas, it does seem like Robertson is on the way out, 90% or better. Nyes still feels a little TBD. And I think the reason it does feel TBD is I gotta say, just one man's opinion, I don't know that they know how the Matthews situation is going to shake out and how that may inform the outlook of this team over the next year or two. Very, very curious times in Toronto right now.
Very curious times, but for Toronto, they will have the first overall pick tomorrow. The all likelihood is that Gavin McKenna is going to be their selection. But with the Sabres sitting there at four, Travis, there is a non-zero chance that they just go ahead, they sit there with the pick. And I do wonder if even like Ivar Stenberg falls to four somehow. Like the Canucks are linked to Malhotra a lot. So if the Sharks end up deciding, hey, we like Reed better and we want to take a defenseman at two, all of a sudden then Stenberg's sitting there at four. The Sabres have a lot of possibilities here, and I think that's going to be one of the most fun things about it. At the end of the day, if you're the one sitting there with pick number four, all of the potential in the world, are you making the pick for a player like probably Reed, or are you trying to dish that thing to land that star player?
I'm going to give you the worst answer of all time to this question, but it's coherent. It's logical. The entire reason why I love the Byram trade is your backup plan, which I think is the backup plan, is, all right, we'll just use the pick on a potential or likely blue chip prospect. Mm-hmm. Like, you're not picking 17th in the first round. You're picking four. And exactly as you said, Reed, Malhotra, and Stenberg all project as NHLers, like basically around the corner. If that is your worst case scenario, that we just land a blue chip prospect with a team that just finished with 108 points last season, that's a dream plan B scenario. I mean, just think about this being the plan B versus the plan Bs we were talking about for the Sabres like three seasons ago. I mean, right. It's night and day different. If I have the preference, again, you know, you're wishing into the abyss, but it's like, if I have the preference, I am looking for that premium trade, that first line, second line winger, that maybe it's a bigger package that I can rope either the fourth or the 20th into that part of the trade, and at least, you know, fork over a first round pick and as kind of a key piece to bring in that type of talent. But by the way, is there a scenario where they draft four and trade 20? I think that's on the board too. Mm-hmm. This is exactly, by the way, it seems like, wow, Trav, you're saying anything can happen in Buffalo. That is the entire point. That is how you know the front office is doing a good job. The front office is not doing a good job when you say they really don't have any good options, which, by the way, when I do radio in other cities, it's they really don't have, or the Sabres in 716 in the last 15 years, we'd come on here and say, yeah, they're really squeezing the margins here on some of this stuff. Buffalo really does have a lot of options at their disposal, and I think that's exactly where you want to be heading into a draft.
By the way, It is something that I noticed. You had tweeted, like, I think it was like 45 minutes ago, bring Jason Robertson to the 716. I'm like, this is why we have this guy. This is why this is one of the many reasons why we love Travis Yost, is he's here to help pitch the dream. And the dream is still very much alive. And Travis, I hope that the next time we talk that Jason Robertson's a Buffalo Sabre.
Robertson or Nice, I think you're on the right track with it. I think either one of them, whether one is a high end goal scorer or the other one is a good goal scorer and really a good great lineup fit, I think if Buffalo gets one of those two guys, it's hard to see any other scenario where you don't call this offseason a success. So eager to see what happens.
Fun times ahead. Travis, enjoy the chaos that is going on in the NHL. Get some fluids in you, because it might be some long days ahead as well with the draft tomorrow. But thanks for coming on. We'll talk again soon.
I'm hooked up to an IV of Red Bull. Thanks, boys.
Here we go, Travis.
Travis Yost, TSN, there on the Wester Hotline. And, yeah, just the NBA had a big trade today as well. LaMelo Ball heading to Minnesota, and yet still, in part because, you know, we're not an NBA market, but it still feels like the NHL, though. It's just every day something else is happening. More is going on. And today we're getting reports by Greg Wyszynski, another friend of the show and friend of the station, you know, talking about the trade package that seemingly is desired by Dallas for Jason Robertson. And it's a package the Sabres could probably absolutely afford. They would have to kind of figure out some of the cap situations. It sounds like Robertson is a guy that maybe wants $14 million a year. As Travis, though, mentioned with us, numbers are going up in the contracts. And also, yeah, he's a 90 to 100 point player like most years. It makes a lot of sense
routinely.
Why he wants that.
Fun times, man. It is kind of funny. Like, I don't know where it came from last year, where, you know, like, hope is in the doldrums, you know, nothing is fun. Like, the climate around the Sabres is the weather outside.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, here's Travis Yost, randomly on a Saturday, him and I just go, hey, what about Jason Robertson?
It is incredible that in a calendar year, their plans have gone to living with hope and a prayer to, no, they kind of have opened. And
it's kind of realistic now.
I said this yesterday. They've opened up basically every door.
If they somehow come out of this offseason, like, yeah, you lose Byram, you lose Tuck, and you end up with a player like a Jason Robertson or of the ilk, how do you not call it a success? Knowing that you had three players that were all out the door. We all knew that Kesselring wasn't signing. We all knew Tuck wasn't signing. We all knew Byram wasn't signing. Well, we found out Byram wasn't signing. And you managed to get the collective package you have for the three of them. That is still a net positive. Now comes the hard part. You got to find a way to get something in the door to at least make sure that you did not only lose players on your roster.
803-0550, the number to call. Jason Robertson, Matthew Nyes, stay at four and take the best player available. Where's your head at with the draft tomorrow night here in Buffalo? We'll also have primetime players coming up at 11. We've got plenty of time, though, today to just hang out and kind of bask in what the Sabres can be this offseason. Give the number to call, 803-0550. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer on WGR.
It's Paul Hamilton.
Oh, Cervantes and Hamilton going to each other and the whiskey. Oh. Into it.
We have the fight.
With Mike Schopen, the Bulldog.
Knocheck was just totaled by an Iowa State player against the board.
I think it was by Hamilton.
On WGR.
Really a pretty unnecessary hit by Hamilton. Hamilton is still awfully mad. He's being held back.
Number 17, Paul Hamilton. 2 minutes for charging, 5 minutes for fighting, and a misconduct.
Sports Radio 550.
Is there nowhere any tape of Paul scoring a goal? It's always these penalties. Mm. It's this one incident that, I don't know, I would not let that define me. But I don't know, maybe we don't have audio of, wasn't Paul like an accomplished goal scorer?
Paul was an excellent all-around player.
He's not a fighter.
Paul, right?
Yeah, we almost, my girlfriend recorded that in her dorm room, and I scored two goals in the first 5 minutes of the game, and she hadn't started recording yet.
Oh, well, tough one.
That was the end of that relationship.
Yeah.
So that was the end, but that was the end of my chance to get a hat trick, was getting involved in the that fight. Mess that you heard. But yeah, I had two goals before the game was 5 minutes old.
Just take your word for it.
That's tone setter. That's what they used to call you in college. Not the bone, tone. Tone setter.
Paul. Right. I never scored 4 goals in a game. I did score 5 once.
Just decided, why not 5?
Never yeah. got the 4.
Why not 5? Just keep going. Let's start with Alex Tuck today, Paul. Not that his not returning is a shock at all, but we know now, traded to Washington, the Capitals get to sign him for an extra year this way. Put it into perspective, maybe, knowing that, again, we've had the conversations about him that we, you know, all kind of thought this probably would happen somewhere.
Well, none of us knew what went into this decision. Is it going to be a location? Does he want to go out west where his wife is from? This is his hometown team. They're just getting good. My sources are telling me that the Sabres did up their offer. I don't think they hit 10, but I think they got it up around 9 or a little bit over. And all right, let's be honest, this is about money. And he took the money, and off to Washington he goes. And it was really about nothing else. I mean, you can't tell me it's a, you know, in Washington where it's crazy that it's better life or whatever. Maybe it is. I don't know. I didn't live in Washington. Yeah, it was about money, and he's going to get it.
And, you know, he earned that, and that's how that goes. In the end, Paul, do you think – I guess is it fair to, like, want to see what else they pull off here before deciding whether they should have gotten to 10? I never thought that they were going to get – all the way there. I'd heard 9, 9.5 for a while, and you started talking about 8.5, and that really was kind of like, oh my gosh, are they just trying not to sign him? Is what I thought when I heard about that. I don't know, how hard do you want to be on the Sabres for not getting to the number?
Well, I didn't think 8.5 would be their final offer, and it wasn't, you know, if that's where it was. And I believe that it was in that area. So it wasn't their final offer, but Jarmo Kekalainen again reiterated today about the dangers of signing a 30-year-old to an 8-year contract. Then you know you get into the money standpoint. He said, in order to go to Tuck's number, they would have had to get rid of 3, maybe 4 players, which he wasn't willing to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it would have been that many, especially opening up $10.25 million with the last night's activities, with 2 players going to the Chicago Blackhawks. Now, Benson will eat up around $7 million of what they had. I mean, they had around $13 million to spend this year, and Benson would have eaten up around $7 million of that. You would add $6 million to spend, and then you just got $10 million back. So you would have had like $16 million to spend, you know, for what you wanted to do. And they Kekalainen just didn't seem comfortable with it. He didn't feel that. Mm-hmm. Well, let's face it, he didn't think Tuck was worth $10.5 million. It's as simple
right.
as that.
Yeah.
And whether it was for the team, what the team could do after they would sign that player to $10.5 million. And he just didn't feel that asking price was worth it to the Buffalo Sabres. He definitely, I think, has other things up his sleeve that he would like to try to accomplish. And he did also mention that some agents have told him that they have clients that have taken the Sabres off their no trade. So, you know, there's starting to be an appetite to maybe come to the Buffalo Sabres. I don't know if players named Larkin or Robertson have an appetite mm-hmm. to do that. But, you know, so, you know, he'll be looking into that. He, you know, he acknowledged what Tuck brings is, you know, he was a big part of their roster. He was a big, good leader. He was an important player. But as he said, some players have the right to choose, and he chose differently. And but, you know, well, the one thing he said, which if he winds up doing, I think will make this trade worse, or, you know, this transaction worse, mm-hmm. if you want to call it a trade. I guess it is, but is, you know, he said, well, you know, we have good young players here, and, you know, if we have to replace within, he goes, I'm very confident we can do that. I think your team is not even anywhere near as good as it was if that's your move.
Yeah.
You know, it's I believe in Osland, and I believe in Kulik, and I believe in
Hellenius,
and I think they have two studs coming on defense, Mertka and Kleber, within the next couple of years, 1 to 2 years. But that's a ways away. And where's Thompson when these guys get ready to make the Sabres good, which I think they will. Where's Thompson at in his career then? Where is, you know, some of the other guys? Where's Dahlin at in his career when all this is happening? So I think that would be a huge mistake. I don't think that's necessarily what he wants to do.
Right.
I don't think that's what he's setting out to do. I think he's looking to bring a really good player in to replace Tuck, but it's not going to be a $10.5 million player, you know, because he's already said they can't afford that unless something goes out, you know, some money goes out if you're attempting to do that. And if Robertson is willing to come to Buffalo, I'd be attempting to get some people out of here to bring a player like that in here.
Jason Robertson. Well, there's always this, not always, a lot of these.
By the way, he's thought to be looking for a contract in the $12.5 million range, Robertson.
Right.
So
that's why I said you'd
outrageous.
Have to get some folks out of here.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, I was going to say there's always a short-term goals versus long-term vision battle. Not always. Like when a lot of these Sabre teams have been bad and there's no short-term element at all. You're just trying to dig out with youth and prospects, et cetera. But here, I mean, I guess if it's right that the Sabres offered Tuck something close to what he ended up getting, that's not the same as saying, well, we don't think he's got it anymore. But it can be said, and we would all say it, that long-term, that's going to be a lot of money for what he's probably going to give you in a few years, if not sooner. So, interesting spot here, of course, for Kekalainen, Paul, with the balance of always having the long-term stuff in mind, not being willing to sign Byram for what that would cost, versus what they got in, I think, an excellent trade package. We'll talk about that. But also, you know, trying to get farther with a team that went deep this year.
And he got some things in that trade that will allow him possibly to reload with good players, really good players. You know, the fourth overall pick, moving up to 20. I mean, if we're talking about a really, really good player and you put both those picks in a package, you can maybe get that really good player where maybe you couldn't before. So, you know, that's helped him to load up. Even, you know, your third round pick that you're going to get for Tuck could become part of a trade, you know, that you can include, you know, in something like that. Or the second round pick that you got from Chicago. You know, you may have to give up one of your what I call two stud defensemen that are on their way, because I think they're both projected in my mind to be top four defensemen. And let's face it, look at the ages of your top three. They're not going anywhere soon, and they're all tied into long-term deals. So you got maybe one spot in the top four. So maybe one of those two wind up in some sort of a trade that lands you a really good player. So, you know, there's a lot of highway here.
Sure, they've got a ton of ammunition, including what they got last night. I mean, you know, I immediately thought, okay, well, you can flip the fourth into, like, I don't know, your name here. I mean, it's a matter of whether you can get guys to waive and you can afford them and all that. But, like, you know, that's a valuable asset. To me, it's a much more valuable asset if I'm sort of rebuilding here. But I'm not. I'm trying to build on a 109-point team that won the division that should be looked at as a cup contender. And, yeah, I mean, I like the deal in a vacuum. I mean, I think they fleeced Chicago, but I really didn't get anything I need directly from it unless I spin four into something that helps me right away.
If you wind up with a forward, one of the top three forwards or four forwards, you might get somebody you can use pretty quickly.
Yeah.
But I mean, the people are talking about the top three picks being forwards, which means Buffalo, in a very good defenseman draft, would get the top defenseman.
Mm-hmm.
But what with what we're talking about now, I mean, Dahlin took him 4 years. Power took him 4 years. Now, there are exceptions. Schaefer,
right.
You know, McCarr, Quinn Hughes, and we can go on, Hudson. There are exceptions to that rule, but still, you're probably 2-3 years away or more with that, even with a top defenseman that you might be getting. That's not on the menu right now, I think. That's not what you're looking for, I would think.
Yeah.
And if that's what you're looking for, then you're going backwards as a team. You're not going forward. So that's not what I would be looking for. I'd be looking for somebody that I can get in here and be useful to my team within the year.
With Paul Hamilton, so how do you think, saying all that, they did last night with this trade? I mean, again, as Bulldog has said, we all have. There's still more to happen here in the next week, assumedly. But just, you know, at least in a vacuum, what do you think of the Byram trade?
No, it was great. I mean, I'm making phone calls like
what's the catch?
Is this right now? It's the fourth, and Buffalo probably has to give up 20, right? No.
Right.
What do you mean no? They're getting the fourth. Okay, well then Buffalo has to give up the second round pick. No. And they're getting a defenseman too that did play in the top four for Chicago. Oh, they are they? Who's 6'8"?
And has a 100 mile an hour slap shot.
Yeah.
Right.
I kept making calls saying, well, this isn't quite right, right? I mean, it has to be this.
What about Greenway, Paul? Was that a plus in your mind, too?
Yeah, sure, because we've been talking about that for a bit now. You know, how do you open up some money? Well, Greenway's $4 million and McLeod's $5 million, open up $9 right there. You know, well, Greenway went, and Chicago is willing to take that on. So you opened up $4 million between the two of them that went to Chicago. You opened up $10.25 million in your salary cap. You can open up $5 million more if you have to, in my mind, because I'll just keep saying it. I think Ostlund right now is as good or better than McLeod. He's not as fast, and speed does matter. But, judging by what I saw last year, McLeod had a down year defensively to the point where Ruff basically had to take him off his line by the time the playoffs were over. And Ostlund was always out there at the end or, you know, when you needed him at age 21. So I think if you need to and you need to open up his money, you've got a guy you can put in his spot.
So we've got the vacancy from Tuck, the vacancy from Byram. We haven't talked about goaltending. Bulldog and I did yesterday. What is your feeling about what the Sabres want to do in goal, if anything? And B, does anything that's happened in the last 24 hours change that?
Yeah, it didn't sound like him talking about the goaltending today that he's all that concerned about it.
Okay.
I think he and I are on a pretty similar wavelength there. If you can improve your goaltending, by all means, improve it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's something there that comes your way and you can improve it and it's reasonable to do it, yes. Try to improve anywhere. You know, if you can get Cal McCarr and you have Rasmus Dahlin, but you can improve your D, well, of course you go get Cal McCarr. You know, so if you can get a goaltender that's going to make you better, but in my opinion, if it's me, I am not giving up the fourth pick overall for a goaltender. I'm just not. Especially to get a goaltender who's going to take 8.5 off my salary cap, who has won a gold medal and played really, really well and basically stole Team USA a gold medal, but has not performed well in the playoffs as a Winnipeg Jet. But is he a better goalie than what Buffalo has on their roster? Yes, he is. I'm just not giving up a fourth-round pick. Fourth overall and putting 8.5 on for a goaltender. I'm just not. I used to say a first-round pick, I'm not giving up any first-round pick for a goaltender. I've since, you know, with Vasilevsky and stuff, I've kind of cooled on that a little bit. I think, yeah, would I give up 20? Yeah, probably. But I wouldn't get. I just wouldn't.
I think I'm with you, Paul. Like I want action, and like Hellebuck's not my favorite idea, but I also wouldn't be like, you know, lighting fires and burning things down if they were to make a move. But I don't think the fourth overall pick. Like if that's what it would take to make that deal, then I gotta have a different plan. I think is what I need.
No, I definitely agree that with that, and you need good goaltending to win in the playoffs. You know, I think Lukanen had some pretty good moments. Yeah, he let one in from the red line. That doesn't define him. I mean, Dominik Hasek letting a playoff goal from the red line, too. Think of Bondra and Junot. One scored from the wall and one scored from center ice. I mean, and Dominik Hasek is one of the best goaltenders that ever lived. You know, so it happens. You know, I'm not going to sit there and rip into Lukanen because he let a goal in from the red line. You know, is he inconsistent? Sure he is. I think he... From December 9th on, he was one of the better goaltenders around. I think Lyon also was very good. They had their moments in the playoffs both ways. But to me, it's not one of their biggest problems. And but if I could be better in goal, and to me, Bobrovsky is not better in goal. I did not like him at all last year. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if he's done. So that, to me, would not be getting better in goal.
Can you get all the prospects back like a couple days early so that you can talk to them again, knowing that now you might have to know one of them?
You came right to mind when I found out they got the fourth pick, Paul. As soon as I started pondering if they actually would make the selection instead of spinning it into, you know, Dylan Larkin or Matthew Nyes, be still my beating heart. I remember when Paul said he like this is what I said the same thing today. I'm looking at the I'm like, who are the guys at the top of the draft? I mean, I know the two forwards, but like, what about the rest? Like, I haven't spent much time at all because we thought, you know, 27 and then 20, but now suddenly it's, you know, they're right there at the top.
Well, I did get six of them: Stenberg, Smits, Veroff, McKenna, Mahaltra, and Reed. So I did get six of them.
Good list.
That's a good list. Those are
the top six.
That would be
a pretty good chance.
That'd be one of the guys.
If Buffalo takes the pick, one of those six is going to be their pick.
I think that's right. Yeah. Well, who did you like the most, Paul?
Who was the nicest?
Who was the most polite?
McKenna was very well spoken. Seemed to know his stuff. Obviously, that's not happening. Chase Reed. I think there's a pretty good chance, especially if the top three, because Mahalter and Reed talk together, and I think it could be one or the other.
Yep. If Vancouver wants to, you know, draft their new coach's son, like their third, like that's
Reed probably should be the pick for them, but they may take the coach's son, who's a very good pick, and then I think Buffalo might go for the other, possibly that wouldn't go if Buffalo is actually making the pick and not trading it.
Where did Mahotra play? The junior, did he play out west?
I can find that in a minute here, but I'd need to look. I don't have it committed to memory.
I just wrote about
memory.
Him, and I forgot, to be quite honest. Oh, Brantford. He played for McKee in Brantford.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah. So not a huge culture shock, necessarily, if he doesn't go to Vancouver.
Yeah, because he talked about playing for McKee.
All right, good. So Friday is the day for the first round. Is there anything tomorrow? Like, that's when everybody gets in, the players and agents?
Everybody gets in. A couple of these guys will wind up at New Era. You know, just an event where they sign hats or get hats, or I don't know exactly what happens.
Both, probably. Sign and get hats.
Yeah. So that's more of a picture opportunity type of a thing. And then we go at it on Friday.
Bulldog skipping on Friday.
Where is he skipping to?
I'm riding...
You're riding.
Well, Saturday's the big 45-mile ride, but Friday evening, they've had, every year that I've lived in my house, the thing has ridden right past my house, a Peloton. It's at the top fundraisers each year get to ride in like a police-escorted Peloton from the Roswell campus out to UB. And I raised enough money. I raised enough last year, but didn't want to take the day off. And this year, I just really wanted to do it, so I'm doing that.
Want to too. That's great.
So I'm gonna miss the draft, but I'm missing draft day.
You didn't know at the time. You didn't realize it was.
No, I didn't.
You didn't realize the Sabres would make the playoffs. So you went on a trip.
Right. Now, right.
Oh, the draft is in Buffalo. I'm going to be off for another thing.
I had the days all mixed up, and I didn't even know. And, you know, Owen was in here on Saturday last year on the draft. I don't think he was involved in the first round coverage, but he, like, helped anchor 7 hours of draft coverage on Saturday, and he's going out of town, too. So he's not going to be around.
We're stripped bare.
You ready, Paul? More talking on Saturday.
Paul. All the
and
Paul.
By the way, people, if I could give everybody a PSA here about the draft. To those of you going to the arena for the draft on Friday, don't forget the Taste of Country is also down there at the ballpark, and usually that is sold out.
Oh, yeah.
So parking is going to be wild down there. So just so people realize that if they didn't.
Thank you, Paul. We'll talk again probably tomorrow.
All right, take care.
All right, there you go. That's Paul Hamilton on the Western Hotline. His appearance is brought to you by Relax Honda. Relax, we got this.
How about these moves? Tuck to Washington, not a shock that he isn't returning, but sad. Bowen Byram to Chicago, the fourth overall pick. Do you want to use it? 803-0550, here for your comments. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, WGR.